The first ever Warehouse Games Captains League Slapball Tournament is underway. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to see all the action from Slapball presented by Shady Rays. Upgrade your eyewear game today with an exclusive offer from Shady Rays. Go to ShadyRays.com, use code Warehouse for 40% off polarized sunglasses. Try for yourself the shades rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. Thanks, Shady Rays.
It is Wednesday, January 25th, 2023. This is another edition of Baseball Today. That is my man, Trevor Plouffe. I'm Chris Rose. Producer Rob is back with us today. Did you get woken up by the earthquake overnight at 2 a.m.?
I did. It shook the crap out of my house. And then it was short. It was a quick one and stopped. And, you know, people, not a lot of people experience earthquakes, especially if you don't live in California. But when you do, you just sit there waiting for the next, you know, shake right. to come. And nothing happened after that one. So we're happy the house is okay. I called on some people that I know that lived in Malibu. I believe that Malibu was the epicenter, which is.
Yes, it was.
Kind of a little scary because, you know, there's a lot of mountains there and mudslides. And after all this rain, I'm curious to see what the canyons look like. But all is good here. Did you feel it?
Oh, yeah. I'm not a good sleeper regardless. So when that starts a shaking, oh, I get terrified. Oh, it's horrible. I'm sure that Brady, our 17-year-old, had no idea. That guy could sleep. If there was a train running through his room, he wouldn't know. I wish I had that sleep gene.
Were you here in 94?
I was
not.
In
Reno?
Oddly enough, I was not in Reno yet. I was working in Cincinnati, but part of the reason Michelle moved to Reno was after the Northridge earthquake. She was like, I'm getting out. So if that earthquake hadn't happened, because that was 2 miles from where she grew up, where she was living at the time, you know, and you were right in the middle of it too.
I was further away, but my life was there. My grandparents had a house in Reseda, which is really close to Northridge. And I mean, everything got messed up. We ended up living in a trailer in my grandparents' driveway because the freeway overpass that we would take to get there in the morning fell apart. So there's no way to get there. So we had to sleep in a trailer for, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 months.
Whew. All right. Well, this is not earthquake today. It is baseball today. So let's get to it. Scott Rolen, the lone Hall of Famer, as voted on by the writers yesterday. Quite an accomplished hitter. Rolen also inducted because of his 8 Gold Gloves, his outstanding base running as well. How much does Rolen's all-around game bode well for a more diverse Hall moving forward, in your opinion?
If this guy in this type of game, like, took this long to get into the Hall of Fame, I don't know what we're doing here, people. I want to give him a little bit of credit before we talk about anything else. I mean, Scott Rolen is one of the best baseball players to ever play baseball. Now, he's in the Hall of Fame, so we know that. But whether you look at his numbers or whether you saw him play, I mean, he was special. I think back watching him man third base, you know, he has 8 Gold Gloves, Chris. And he's a big boy, 6'4", 245, they got him listed as. And you watch him over there, and it was like a bear playing third base. He's getting to everything, and everything was so consistent. I think that's always been part of getting into the Hall of Fame, is being consistent for a long period of time. I mean, he was the model of that. He ended up with 70.1 career baseball reference war. I got to see him in Cincinnati at the end of his career. And even there, I think he was an all-star two out of his last three seasons. And he was just a guy you looked at and were like, and you said, this is who I want to be like. Like, he did everything really well and, like, elite. You know, we say, like, he was an okay hitter, an 855 career
OPS. No, he wasn't
OPS. This guy was an absolute star. And the way he did it, as, like, I always go back to, he was just bigger over there, but he moved so gracefully. And that, to me, really stood out about him. So I'm happy that he's in. And again, you asked me the question of how does it bode for people moving forward, like with all around games. It should bode really well for them. These people who can do it all. I mean, that's kind of the definition of a ball player. And, you know, when you played baseball at any level, you know who those guys are, the guys that can just get it done. Scott Rolen was one of them. And hopefully this opens the floodgate for more guys to get in with his type of skill set. But he was so elite. I feel like we're always trying to, or not always, but over the last couple of years, when we talk about Scott Rolen, we're like, well, he was really good defensively, but as a hitter, you know, bullshit, dude. This guy was a stud.
He was. And I have to tell you, obviously, I'm not a baseball writer, so I don't have a vote for the Hall of Fame. But I have changed my thinking, I think, over the last decade. I used to think that, okay, while I was watching that person play, did I think surefire Hall of Famer? And I think that when I was watching Scott Rolen play throughout his career, I was never like, oh, dude, I feel like I'm watching a Hall of Famer. But sometimes that you have to kind of step back a little bit and make sure that you're checking all the boxes of telling the story. It's interesting because we think of him as an elite base runner. Well, the first thing we always thought about as kids when you talk about base running is what? Stolen bases. He's got 118. That doesn't tell you much. But when you talk to every guy he played with or against, they were like, Scott Rolen ran the bases as well as anybody. And that helps. That helps you win games. It might not show up. It might not be the thing you talk about right after a game. But players who play the game and people who really watch it for a living understand that sort of stuff. So I think it does open it up for more diverse. Like, Poppy was an easy one for the most part. Dude slugged over 500 homers, won multiple rings, leader of a team. He's in there because of what he did with that piece of lumber in his hands. But I think that it's great that we have the ability now to focus on the game in its entirety, not just batting average, home runs, RBIs. And I think that will make the Hall of Fame even a more special place than it is.
The video of him telling, I believe it was his mother.
Oh,
are you kidding me?
Oh.
He gets choked up saying, the dog, everything was so perfect about that video. Oh, there's multiple dogs.
Yeah, and his dad in the walker, you know, coming over and say, what's going on? What's going on? Like, I'm telling you, dude, I've had the good fortune of being around people when they win championships and then when they get into the Hall of Fame. I used to host the show on NFL Network when they would announce the Hall of Fame class. And some of the greatest memories I've ever had in television, because you're just around people, you just kind of get to watch them and just see how their life changes in a second. Beautiful. It was beautiful.
Beautiful.
So touching. I loved it. By the way, I am wearing a Cardinals hat. I apologize. I cannot find my Phillies hat. I would have switched it midway through the answer.
That's interesting.
I consider him both a Cardinal and a Philly.
Yeah, me too. And he's always wore red. Except for the one brief stop in Toronto.
Toronto. Yep.
There's a little bit of red in there. What does he go in as?
He could go in logo-less. We've had that recently. So I think he goes in as a Cardinal, but I'm not 100% sure. I know that would piss off Philly fan, where I think he actually played a year longer than he did in St. Louis. One other quick rolling story, and then we'll move on. He did not love talking to the media, and it wasn't because he was a big surly guy or anything. He was pleasant. He didn't enjoy that part of the game. And when I was getting preseason interviews one year for Fox, he was on my list of guys I wanted to get. He was with the Reds at the time, and Rob Butcher, who's their awesome communications director, was like, I don't know if he's going to do it. You know, that's not his thing. I said, I respect that. Well, he comes rolling down the hall. He goes, okay, Rosie, let's do this. And I didn't really know him. He goes, I got to be honest with you. The only reason I'm doing this is because Millar called me and told me to do it. So here I am. So, yeah, they had played together in Toronto and became friends. So, shout out. What was the next most important story to come out of the Hall of Fame voting yesterday?
I don't want to get negative. This is usually a positive show. But we talked about the way that guys are getting inducted and kind of the voting process of all of this. What gets me, Chris, is we see these massive jumps in voting. And I don't really understand that. Now, I know we took some people off of the ballot. You know, it was a lot of the steroid guys are off of the ballot this year. But is that the only reason we saw these massive jumps? If you think this year that Billy Wagner or Andrew Jones or Todd Helton deserved your vote, they didn't deserve it last year? Or if you didn't vote for those guys this year, but they're so close now, Todd Helton was only what, like 11 votes shy or something like that. Mm-hmm. Are you going to vote for him next year because he was only 11 votes shy and you see this momentum? Like, I don't understand that thought process. Now, tell me if I'm wrong. There's only a certain amount of votes you could have each year, right? You can't vote for the entire thing.
You can vote for up to 10.
Okay. So that's more than I thought it was. I thought it was 5. So that now makes even less sense to me. Like, if you think a guy is going to be a Hall of Famer down the road, like, why are you waiting 3 years to vote for this guy? I don't understand that thought process. Is if he's a Hall of Famer, if he meets your criteria to be a Hall of Famer, vote for him. Let's not wait. Let's not have these massive jumps. Like, I don't understand that. So to me, that it's exposing that side of things where it's like, what are we doing? Why are we waiting so long? Is it a media pressure thing as we see these guys get closer and closer to that 75% threshold? I don't know what it is, but I just don't like the fact that we're waiting. If you think he's a Hall of Famer, vote for him.
Well, I do think part of it is we have to remember, as much as some people don't see them that way, writers are human too. And so the closer somebody gets to their end of eligibility, meaning they've got 10 years and then they're off the writer's ballot, sometimes I imagine they sit there with the little list of guys and they go, do I want to be the reason this person doesn't get in the Hall of Fame? Like, could I live with myself if I'm the one vote that could have changed that person's trajectory? I imagine that's part of it. I really do. To me, there were 4 guys that jumped up at least 14%, which is a substantial amount. Substantial. Yeah. So it was Helton, Wagner, Andrew Jones, and Gary Sheffield that all jumped at least 14%. To me, Sheffield's the most interesting one, because if you just look at his numbers, just the numbers, and you watched him play, that guy's a Hall of Famer. Yes. The one thing that is holding him back is that he admitted that he accidentally took the cream. I don't know how that accidentally gets on you, whatever, but you can measure that out the way you want. He jumped from basically 40% to 55%. Now, does he have another 20% in him? I doubt that. But maybe people are starting to change their thought process on those people who did not get penalized for using whatever they used. Maybe some people say, maybe they don't buy his that he accidentally put it on, but maybe they're finally going, you know what? Baseball didn't punish him, so why should I? That's the one I'm going to be watching next year most closely.
I do not envy the people who have to vote for the Hall of Fame, because you do have to struggle with these types of decisions. You know, when you have guys linked to PEDs, now we're seeing it with Carlos Beltran and the Astros scandal, which I had a couple ball players. I had conversations with them last night about that. And, you know, in my opinion, I think that is on par with, and I know he didn't do it his whole career, so like, that's something you have to think about, but like, being part of that scandal, and really, if you think about it, like him, Cora, and Hinch, those are the guys that I blame for that whole thing. I don't blame the young guys. If you're a rookie, you listen to the veterans. That was a massive thing, and they ruined some people's reputations by continuing to do it. I don't envy the writers for having to be those enforcers. You know, like, it's a difficult job, no doubt about it. And Sheffield's a clear example of that.
Yeah, you know, I thought Beltran actually did better than maybe I anticipated out of the gate. He got nearly 50% of the vote.
His numbers are incredible, too.
His numbers are ridiculous off the boards. I mean, he was, you talk about a complete player. Power, he could just hit, he could get on base, he could run, he could steal bases, and he could play defense. He could do everything. He has been penalized the most out of anyone because of the cheating scandal, right? He got released as manager of the Mets and hasn't, as far as I know, hasn't gotten another interview. And now he's being penalized as a player as well. So it's kind of interesting that he's the one that's wearing this.
Well, I think, like I said, I think, yeah, him, Cora, and Hinch, like, those are the guys that were the people that should have stopped this, but they didn't.
Cora and Hinch are back, though. And have
I
been.
Know? Yeah, you're right. No, you're totally right. Well, Beltran's doing TV and stuff, and, you know, hired by a
That's
team.
That's not
but
the
like,
same. That's not the same.
I bet you, if he wanted to, he can go back into managing. I don't think he wants to.
Do you?
I do. Huh. If those two guys, we don't need to go back onto this. I don't understand that at all.
Okay, but very quickly, and I want to kind of put a cap on this point. Each of those guys had World Series resumes as managers. That's the reason they're back.
Sure. I could see that.
That's
and
right.
At the time, the Mets were, they didn't know what the hell was going on. Then Steve Cohen came in and changed that franchise. Right. Like, yeah.
Right.
This episode is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. And people, it is time. Four NFL teams left, two conference championship games, and we got a doozy of a deal for you. If you're a new customer, you can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly. And even if you're not a new customer, we can do these stepped up same game parlays. You take your shot at an even bigger NFL payout and boost your winnings with each leg you add up to 100%. And all you have to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code baseball today. New customers can bet $5 on the conference championships and get $200 in free bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code baseball today. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
Let's talk about Alex Cora's team, the Red Sox. They pick up Adalberto Mondesi for lefty reliever Josh Taylor. A bigger deal that Mondesi helps fill the Trevor Story void, or that he never really took his game to the next level while with Kansas City?
It's a tough question for me to answer. I like that he's going there. I want to talk about the positivity of this. I think he is going to help out with that void at shortstop there. You know, between Kike and Mondesi, I think you could figure some things out. When we talk about the Red Sox offseason, and I just went on Talking Baseball and talked about how I thought they are kind of losers in this whole offseason process because they didn't really upgrade their starting pitching staff enough for me. The Trevor Story news, I think, really hurt them and their lineup, because if you can slot him in at shortstop and get him back to even 80% of what he was, you're looking at a very, very good shortstop. Now we're kind of trying to piece something together. I love Kike and Mondesi as players, but they're not Trevor Story with the Rockies. So I think this helps them out. I don't think it's the solution. And maybe it could be. Maybe he takes that jump. Maybe he feels the pressure. And Kansas City, they weren't going to win. And sometimes, you know, you don't feel that edge that you need. You go to Boston and they're trying to get out of last place and you're playing against the competition he's going to be playing against. Sometimes that elevates dude's performance, and hopefully that happens for Mondesi. But I like the addition. I think he's got the skill to play shortstop. I think you watch that guy play super, super toolsy. So I guess that kind of alludes to the second part of the question of did he ever really fulfill the potential, which is probably no, but there's still time left for him to do that.
Yeah, he's been a disappointment at the plate. Once he gets on base, he's great. In fact, from a 3-year span from, you know, 2019 through 2021, and that includes the pandemic shortened season in 2020, he stole almost 100 bases. And because of the new rules in terms of limiting a pitcher's ability to throw over to first, he could be a major, major weapon at some point. I mean, even in late in games, if he comes on as a, let's say he's a defensive replacement and they put Kike somewhere in the outfield or they move him to second or whatever it is, however you want to do it, you have Mondesi's legs with the ability to change a game. That's a big deal. That's a big, big deal for Boston. That's a weapon. Part of the reason that Kansas City's been caught in the muck in late, you know, the last few seasons is because guys like Mondesi just haven't developed. So this is a problem for them. They've got to get guys. And now I'm reading that. So they traded Michael A. Taylor a couple days ago. They traded Mondesi yesterday. You read that Hunter Dozier might be available. I'm curious what they're doing there. It just feels a little bit all over the place.
Kansas City is an interesting ball club for me because I saw them go from nobody in the stands to everybody in the stands. This is one of the most packed houses when I was playing against them. Obviously, they were in the World Series back-to-back years. That really helps. And now they're kind of back to like, what are you going there to see? Besides the ballpark, the ballpark's cool to go see. It's old but nice. And now, you know, you got to give your fans something, dude.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that hanging on to Hunter Dozier and Michael A. Taylor and Adalberto Mondesi is – you know, is going to turn you into a 95 win team, but it's like, you know, those are guys that you felt like you could help springboard into something fun down there. And it just hasn't been. We're going to have to rely on my guy, Vinny Pasquantino.
I love him, but it's a lot of just subtraction. You know, like we need some addition there. We need to see a better record. I mean, there's so many things you have to do right. I know it's difficult to do that, but right now they're seemingly going in just a bad direction.
Speaking of which, you mentioned that we don't like to be negative, but sometimes you have to be realistic as well. We're about 3 weeks out from camp. Which team had the most head-scratching offseason? Better not be the one that I picked.
I hope it's not. There's a couple teams you could talk about. I think, you know, the Mariners are an interesting one. They made some moves. I kind of wanted to see them go a little bit further there. The Red Sox I mentioned, I thought, you know, they kind of – they're in a place now where did you do anything to get out of the cellar in the AL East? And I don't know if they did enough to get out of the cellar in the AL East. So to me, that's why I gave them my biggest loser. Another head-scratchy one is the Marlins for me. Like, I think they're so close. I think they're so close. That's going to be my answer for you for this question. Well, they could be. They could be. Because
They could be so close.
Well, it's going out and getting players and convincing players to come to your team. Like, when you have the stockpile of pitching that they have, you're in the envy of the league, okay? And they've turned that in. They traded one, got Luis Arraez. I like that move. I think it's going to help their offense. But, like, there were free agents out there to be had, not just this year, the last couple years as well. Like, they needed to go make those moves. They brought in some guys. They bring in, what is it, Soler? They bring in Avisel Garcia. But I think there are better hitters to be had, and they could do that. They have enough room, payroll wise. Remember, there's no salary cap in baseball, but you know the self-imposed cap they put on each themselves. They could have went out and made some moves offensively, and we could have been talking about, like, the Marlins are fucking scary. I want to say that. I want to be able to say that, Chris. And I just, we can't. We can't say that because offensively they don't have enough. How many games? You watched a lot of Marlins games last year. How many games were you just like, dude, if you guys could just score a few runs, things would be completely different. They have not addressed that enough. Okay. And like, if you're looking at bounce back years for Soler and Avisel Garcia, great. I hope they do have bounce back years. Even with them in the lineup, it's still not enough. And that's why I say they're close. Now, I don't know who they could have went out and got. If it was a Jose Abreu type figure, you know, possibly there's other trades on the horizon for them. But to me, teams dream about having the depth of starting pitching because they can now go make these moves, whether trading them or just going in and bringing in the offense that they're lacking. They just haven't done that to me. So that, to me, that's a little head scratching.
Okay. I think that's a good one. I'm going to go with the Baltimore Orioles. Winning record last year. Well, I'm going to repeat that. Winning record last year. I say that because their winning percentage the four previous seasons, 321, 417, 333, and 290. Dog shit. And then last year, fun, young, energized team. You look at that farm system, you're like, oh my God, they're coming. They are coming, or in some cases, they're here. So what do? Their biggest move was to trade for a catcher who's making more than $12 million each of the next 2 years in James McCann. I like James McCann. I think he's a solid player. Last year, major injury issues and coming, you know, they were buying low. So I guess that's what they're doing here, and they'll hope that but they have a catcher. Your best player is a catcher. Adley Rutschman is going to be back there 135 games. So what we're hoping that James McCann can be back there 30 games and DH a little bit and provide some pop. I mean, is that what we're doing here? Because he's not going to play first base.
I think you just kind of have Adley's future in mind when you sign a guy like James McCann, not having him back there for so many games.
Okay.
Right?
The rest of their moves, Kyle Gibson, serviceable starter. Hold on. You have to. I like Gibby too, but I mean, come on. If we're talking about a guy that can lead a young rotation, maybe he's an excellent leader. I'm sure he is. But I'm talking about the dude. Carlos Rodon was right out there, you know, and I know that, you know, they're waiting for Grayson Rodriguez and Hall and saying those will be our guys of the future. That's fine. Let somebody else be the dude right now. Their payroll's under $70 million.
Yes. I agree with you. They could have went out and capitalized on last year, and they haven't done that. And now, I mean, if you really look at them, you really look at the rosters, and I know you got to play the games. I mean, you're slotting them in at fourth in the AL East. Third at best. A lot of things would have to go right for them to break into, you know, and I know they were competing for that last wild card spot up until what, the last like couple days of the season last year. So maybe that's,
yeah,
they're just saying, hey, we're here. We don't have to do anything until we get these reinforcements from our farm system, which is excellent. But
that's,
I agree with
ifs.
You. I agree with you. They could have went out and did a little bit more this offseason. You can say that about a lot of teams.
Totally. Though. Yeah. Yep. I'm still rooting for them. We'll see. Last thing before we get out of here on the YouTube and the podcast side, I think it was down in Venezuela, the Ronald Acuna Jr. home run.
Yeah.
And the longest, most decorated celebration ever. I think I read that he had 9 different celebrations before he even reached first base. Now, you and I love celebrations. We are all about it. Was even this a little too much?
I'm on the record of saying is I don't love all celebrations, Chris. I think I like raw emotion. I don't like pre-planned things. Like when the Brewers did the whole like bomb thing and everyone fell over, like I thought that was so corny and I'm over that. This one was a little bit of raw emotion and a little bit of planned, it seemed like. The one thing I'll say is it's in Venezuela. You know, if you see these guys play ball in the winter league, this is what happens. I think it's gotten a little bit more and more and more as social media has been around. And, you know, we like to see these clips. Ronald Acuna Jr. is known for doing stuff like this. He's obviously going to take it to the next level when he's playing Winter League. The funny thing is he does this. And I think after the game, I saw Hector Gomez tweet out an interpretation of his Instagram story saying he retired from the Venezuelan League. So like he's never going to play again. So like, was this his last at bat? I don't know. It was a 3-0 pitch. I like the passion, but you know, I don't know. I'm iffy on the whole thing. It was a little much.
I loved it. I thought it was real. I thought it was pretty authentic. Yeah. And yeah. I will tell you this: if I were a Texas Rangers fan, I'd be loving life. I'd be like, "Holy shit, he looks great in a Rangers uniform." Man, with that stuff. There are some people who, of course, are going to hate it. I would love to make some old school old heads who haven't changed their thought process on celebrations, sit them down and get their thoughts.
And you don't know what was said during the game, like what pissed him off. Like, does he hate the pitcher? Like there's all sorts of things you could point to. And yeah. Mm-hmm. Trust me. Go speak to people who have played in the, you know, in Venezuela and the Dominican for winter ball. And this is what happens. It's very passionate. They have brought that to Major League Baseball, and it's for the betterment of the game. It really is. I wish we had as much passion in the stands as they do down there. It's tough to do that. But I think we could learn a lot from going and studying those games and seeing what's going on, because dude, like I talk about this all the time from like, you go to a concert, and you might not like the band that's playing, but if they put on a good show and the crowd's into it, you have no choice but to have fun. And the same thing could be said about a baseball game. If you go to one in these winter leagues, the passion is there. Like you're going to have fun because everyone else around you is having fun and the entertainment on the field is great. So I think that we could learn something from them.
Why would you go to a concert for a band you don't like?
Well, if it was like a festival, you know, we have multiple performers playing, something like that. Blink-182 is my example I give all the time. I don't really listen to their music, but when I saw them perform and the way the crowd was, it was awesome.
A good show. Yeah, got it. Good. Sounds good. All right. Listen, we're going to take the rest of the week off, and then we're back at it again next Tuesday. I know. Crazy. We are almost in February, dude. Almost
it's probably
there.
Good because there's not going to be a lot of news, I don't think, over the next couple of days. We're kind of running on fumes here as far as the news and baseball. A lot of the free agents have signed.
Yeah, but there's been a lot. Listen, we haven't had to dig hard to create shows, which is really good. I'll give the baseball hierarchy its credit in the off season and some intervention by the baseball gods and some of the doctors. We're giving us really good topics out
some
there,
of the
so
doctors.
We appreciate it. All right, everybody have a wonderful weekend. Continue to check out the Rose Rotation. Joey Votto is out there right now. Continue to check out Talking Baseball, the number one podcast in your baseball world as well. For our one-of-a-kind producer, Robbie Scirocco, and my man T. Plouffe, I'm Chris Rose. We will see you next week on Baseball Today.